The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Hey there, Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. I should tell you, my leaky black shirt is in.
What are we doing?
It made it all the way to North Mississippi.
What are we doing? Why are you not wearing it?
It just occurred to me as I was saying, hey there, it just occurred to me that my leaky black shirt is here and I should have been wearing it. That's on me.
I was going to not say anything until we got to, there's going to be a point where North Carolina is going to come up on today's show and then ask you and just presume that the United States Postal Service might have failed us, but it did not. It arrived. Did you try it on? Does it fit appropriately?
I have not tried it on. I've merely admired it.
Okay. Good shirt, though, right?
It's a soft shirt.
Yeah, you love your soft shirt. Shout out to Breaking Tee. Breaking Tee does an amazing job with those shirts. Yes, it's a great shirt.
It has to be a soft shirt. If it were not a soft shirt, I wouldn't be able to wear it. But it's a soft shirt, so I'm gonna rock it regularly.
That's what I like to say.
I can see a scenario where I'm walking around in my leaky black shirt, my Boise State shorts.
That's probably going to be Monday, Thursday, and Saturday of every week, probably.
Yeah, that's at least 3 days a week. Yeah. That's my outfit.
You got in the rotation.
I just found out recently. Had no idea. This is how I'm just. I don't know. I don't know. I'm unaware of how other people perceive me. Not in any other way than the way I dress casually. And so I just found out that
Keep going, but just so we're clear here, and I don't even say this as a negative, my man, if you dress the way you want to dress, it's the year 2003. All right. That's just who you are and how it is. All right.
If I'm going somewhere, it's probably jeans and a hoodie. If I got to meet you for a drink, that's probably a jeans and hoodie situation. But if I've just got to go to like my little guy's baseball practice, I will wear like oversized basketball shorts and a t-shirt and a hat on backwards.
Yeah, you're straight out of a Sum 41 video. Yeah.
I look like I'm the front man for Limp Bizkit.
No good. But you know what, you do you.
No, but I didn't even understand that this was anything. And then my wife was like, yeah, I was talking to the coach the other day and he was laughing about your basketball shorts. And I was like, what do you mean laughing about my basketball shorts? She's like, you don't realize you're the only person your age who dresses like that. I just try to be like, right now I'm in basketball shorts and a t-shirt. It's what I wear every day.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm in gym shorts. Yeah, I'm in gym shorts and I'm in a Mo t-shirt. Shouts to Mo. But yeah, no, it's just your deal. Like, you know. I'm used to it, but yeah, people don't, you watch the podcast, you're sitting down. So we normally see it like this, but yes, you are, you have a certain sartorial style that, let's put it this way. Like, you know, the late David Stern would have instituted a dress code on you, but
I need a dress code.
Yeah. You're like, you know, you got a little bit of a Steve Nash feel from back in the day.
Yeah. I walk around in basketball shorts and t-shirts and in a hat all the time.
Yeah.
Like if you see me, that is probably the way I'm dressed, except for flying. How appropriate is it to fly? I wear joggers and a t-shirt. Okay or not okay?
I think it's okay. And on the joggers note, I just got on this train like in April and May.
Love joggers.
Game changer.
It's a game changer.
Game changer. Game. I bought four more. My wife got me a pair. I was like, I don't know. I was like, what have I been doing with my life? Four more within the next like 2 weeks. I'm good to go. We up here in the Northeast. Temps are dropping. Leaves are falling. It's almost cider season. Jogger season. It's coming. Can't wait.
I fly in joggers. I basically camouflage joggers every flight.
Of course they're camouflage.
I love camouflage joggers. I don't want to be seen. I'm trying to blend in.
In case you haven't noticed, it's the off season.
Oh yeah. Hey, if you're watching on YouTube, let's get back to the script. Please.
I like when we get off script, but yes, let's get this car on the on-ramp here.
Smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. Yeah, if you haven't yet subscribed to the YouTube channel, go ahead and knock that out while you're here. All right, Deadleg, our Candid Coaches series has continued. We are up to, I believe, we're through 6 questions so far. On a previous episode last week, we were discussing this just before we went on. We discussed question number 1 and question number 2 and stopped there, but we're not entirely sure, so forgive us. Should we have checked? Should we have checked before we went live?
No, that's not more fun.
Probably. If we're being honest, probably, but we didn't. So we're just going to pick up where we think we left off. And that was with question number 3. Let's bounce through these. This is a fun exercise every single year. Sometimes the answers come back more or less the way I think they would or should. And every once in a while, I'm surprised by the answers that I get from coaches. And I think both of those, you're going to find examples of that in these 4 questions that we're discussing today. So let's start with what I believe was question number 3, which is what league will be the best league going forward? After Texas and Oklahoma officially moved to the SEC, after the schools that are going to the Big 12 go to the Big 12, after UCLA and USC go to the Big 10, what league will be the best league going forward? We asked roughly 100 coaches that question, and the Big 10 came back at number 1 at 41%, followed by the SEC, 28%, Big 12, 15%, ACC, 14%, Big East, 2%. As you noted on Twitter, the Pac-12 was the only thing we know currently as a Power 5 conference that did not get a single vote. Let me ask you, if you were voting on that, I said, give me your answer. What's going to be the best league going forward once all this conference realignment stuff, as we know it now, is settled? Would you have said the Big 10 or another league?
I would have said the Big 12 because I don't think the Big 12 is going to drop too much here. Obviously, it has ranked. Let me bring up the actual data here at KenPom. For KenPom's rankings, the Big 12 has been the best league in the country. How about this? 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and this past season in 22. In 2020 and 2021, it was number 2. Every other year since 14, it's rated as the best. Now, volume has helped. Bigger does not always mean better, because the more teams you have, the more likely you have, you know, 3 or 4 teams that can really bring down the overall weight of the conference from a power rating standpoint. Now, the Big 12 is going to go back to 12 teams. Imagine that logic. But I do think, and talking to a few coaches who voted for the Big 12, you lose Oklahoma, Texas, but you bring in BYU, hello, Houston, UCF, and then Cincinnati. There's a lot there to keep the Big 12, I think, in that conversation overall. One coach told me there's not a bad basketball situation in the entire league. Another coach pointed out to me that they've got the last 2 national champions, and if Virginia Tech had beaten Virginia, they'd have the last 3, right? And another coach told me they feel like Texas and Oklahoma. Now, this is
Texas Tech, rather.
Yeah, what did I say, Texas?
You said Virginia Tech.
Oh, Virginia Tech. As wild as it would be to have the Hokies in the national championship. No, Texas Tech beat Virginia. Obviously, they'd have the past 3 national champions. Another coach surmised to me that Oklahoma and Texas leaving means that, as far as they're concerned, the Big 12 isn't losing two of its top four basketball outfits. Doesn't consider Texas in the top four in that group. Doesn't consider Oklahoma in the top four in that group. And then another coach said, quote,
well, let me stop you there. Give me the top four. Kansas, Baylor, Texas Tech. What do you do there? Where's the four?
I'm just reading the quote he gave me. He didn't give me the other four, so I'm going to say he would put he'd probably Iowa State. I mean, historically, I don't know. The coach just said, in his opinion, he would not put Texas or Oklahoma in the top four men's basketball programs in the conference. And this
I would definitely put Texas in the top four. I'm not going to argue about it, but I would definitely put
Texas. And that coach in particular, well, the head coach, but not in that part of the country. Here's what another coach said. He said, well, they'll add Houston, Cincinnati, BYU, and USF. There's no fall off in the Big 12. Houston has been better than Texas and Oklahoma, and they will continue to be better, I think. Cincinnati has been as good as Oklahoma, and BYU and UCF have been competitive. So those are some insights from the coaches. I personally would pick the Big 12 because the data has suggested it, and I don't think the drop-off is going to be too harsh. The other part to this, GP, for me, is that, again, like Big 10 SEC... First of all, I think with the expanded college football playoff, we talked about this before. I think Texas, Oklahoma will come to regret this in terms of getting. Now they might squeak in here and there, but the competition, the mountain you have to climb is so much tougher in the SEC than it would be in the Big 12. Like if you're a Pac-12 school right now, you're Oregon or Washington, and you stand to make millions and millions and millions of more if you get into the college football playoff with the TV payout. Like, why would you ever leave the league? Like your access to it is so much better in basketball. It's not the same slope in terms of getting into the NCAA tournament, but I do think that having 16 team leagues, the ACC kind of bears this out since it went to 15 teams. There is always, a number of teams in the ACC for the most part. It's actually had had a weird dip recently, GP, but 15 teams has not made the ACC a stronger conference. So I don't think that makes the SEC or the Big Ten more likely. I was not surprised the Big Ten won. You bring in USC and UCLA. I get that, particularly UCLA with its, men's basketball pedigree. It's a top five program of all time. I get it. And I wasn't surprised. I thought the Big Ten was going to win, but personally, I take the Big 12.
I think the answer might be the Big 12 too. Obviously, losing Texas and Oklahoma from a football perspective is devastating. Yeah. But from a basketball perspective, Houston under Kelvin Sampson, and I say this respectfully, but Houston under Kelvin Sampson is a better basketball program than either. At least it has been.
Yes.
Maybe it won't stay that way, but it has been. Cincinnati is a historically strong basketball program.
It's top 12 all time.
Yes. Now, a lot of that was Hugs, although they won national championships before Hugs. Right. But I believe in Cincinnati basketball. So that's a really strong program. BYU is a historically good basketball program.
I think it ranks top three. This is right off the top of my head. It's BYU is either top three all time in tournament appearances without a Final Four or tournament wins. Like it's one of those schools, the best ever to not actually make a Final Four. Very good history, very good program. Yes.
Big arena, and they'll fill it up for Big 12 games. So like that's a positive. And UCF is UCF. Like we don't have to lie to each other. That's not
still, but it's in Parrish, Florida. So much talent, humongous state school. So yes. There's still a lot of growth potential there.
Yeah, there's growth potential there. I think from a men's basketball perspective, what's exiting the Big 12? Take that into consideration. What the Big 12 is replacing it with? I think you can reasonably argue, strictly in the sport of men's basketball, just as good, maybe better. So I think if you acknowledge the Big 12 more often than not over the past decade has been the best league in the country, and then acknowledge that it's going to be, in theory, just as good, perhaps better, the Big 12 might be the right answer to the question. If you were to make me choose between the leagues that finished first and second, I think I'd take the SEC over the Big 10.
Sell me.
Okay. Class of 2022. Four of the top six recruiting classes in the country. So these are the classes that are about to be freshmen in college. Four of the top six are SEC schools. Top 25 and one right now. Seven, if you count Texas, I'm including future SEC member Texas in this. There's seven either current SEC or future SEC schools in the top 25 and one. That's more than any other league. I just think if you look at the natural recruiting base of you know SEC schools and the history of the programs, and more than that, the current state of the programs, how much they're spending on coaches, how much investing in everything, facilities, everywhere except Kentucky, of course. I'm joking.
I know. I was going to just go roll with it. Deadpan, just roll with it.
I just think that's set up to be just an absolute monster. And I get it, people. You know, I was a little surprised the Big Ten got 41% of the vote, because I understand where that comes from, but you can't get away from this fact.
You're going to say it, aren't you?
Even once you put UCLA and USC into the Big Ten, tell me the last time the Big Ten won a national championship.
2000, Michigan State. Yeah,
that's right. I know. That was not a trivia time.
I know, but that's just become the thing attached to this conference there. The Big Ten, I think I got a couple quotes I'll share here from coaches as well in both these leagues in just a second. But the Big Ten won, based on the conversations I had, it won because the SEC coaches definitely got plenty of respect too, but for, you know, the coaching, the way that the teams, this is from, now again, we talked to literally everyone from Hall of Fame head coaches to the second assistant in a one bid league. And they're all over the country. More than two dozen leagues were represented. So we really try and get as much of a fair representative sample size of the profession as we can. And the coaches I was talking to were saying the coaching style, how they run their stuff in the Big Ten, it's, I don't know, it's considered as respected as maybe any league in the country. There's that. There are the venues. There are the fact that you bring UCLA in. You've got a lot of very powerful programs with that. I think all those things kind of added onto it. But I will say, in talking to the coaches about this, a couple coaches are like, well, is there even going to be a Pac-12 in 3 years? I actually think, I said that my guess was that there would be when we did this thought exercise 6 weeks ago on the podcast and all the conference realignment. I think the college football playoff 12-team format with six automatic bids will protect and ensure that we have a Pac-12 and a Big 12 going forward and all that stuff. So that's the good news, is that these conferences from men's basketball standpoint, let alone football and everything else, they're still going to be there. If you have a seat at the table in the college football playoff, there's no reason to dissolve and whatnot. Doesn't mean there still won't be more realignment, but for the purposes of this question, I put forth to these coaches, all right, let's just assume no more realignment, just thought experiment here. And when we look up in 5 years, like, what's the conference you think is going to be most likely to be the best in the Big Ten one because of that? But to your SEC point, there's a couple quotes from these coaches. One said, it's not close in my opinion. They already are heading in that direction with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, and can see a bigger investment that's been made over the past few years starting to pay off. I agree with that. Dan Leibovitz has been overseeing men's basketball in the SEC for the past few years. Undeniably, the conference has put more of an emphasis on a lot of factors in its basketball product, and that is clearly paying off. They just agreed recently, did the SEC, to a scheduling analytics initiative with HD Intelligence, which I've written about previously at CBSSports.com. Like, really good signs about trying to care about the details to do the most you possibly can to make your league the best you possibly can. To your point about the talent, Parrish, another coach said, quote, the SEC recruiting-wise, the last 5 years is out-recruiting everyone in the country. Duke and UNC are getting their guys, but there's seven teams in the SEC getting high 4 stars and 5 stars. The talent is ridiculous in the league. A lot of NBA players in the SEC every year. One more. SEC, just in terms of their aggressiveness in recruiting with NIL, that combined with already natural athleticism physically, top to bottom, even a team that's not as skilled, watching them play, that's a different kind of athlete. When they have football-type athletes that play basketball, that's difference-making. That discrepancy is there, and it's really hard. As a mid-major coach, we play against better Big 12 teams than the SEC, but the SEC is more intimidating because of that athletic discrepancy. So I get the SEC point. I could certainly be sold on it among the top two. I'd still pick with Big 12. I think that SEC-Big 10 race is going to be something to keep an eye on, not just in basketball. People also compare it in football because they're the same. The leagues are going to be the same size with 16 teams, provided no more expansion, obviously. And the realignment is going to happen basically at the same time. Oklahoma, Texas, let's weigh that against what UCLA and USC are bringing to the Big Ten.
Yeah, so I would probably rank them going forward, either Big 12 or SEC, but probably Big 12 1, SEC 2, Big 10 3. but I think we'll agree on this and then we can move on. Those are the top three, right?
They are the top three. Couple coaches voted, you know, we can move on here because we got a few things to get to. Couple vote coaches that voted for the ACC said this will cycle back, you know, come back to me in 4 years. And as long as Hubert and John have really hit at their schools and, you know, at the coaches surmising that Boeheim wouldn't be there. Syracuse is like, you know, not, you know, in a relevant program. He's like, I don't know. There's something about the ACC and the tradition and history there. That league cares inherently more about its basketball product than its football product. So I think that, you know, that coach was saying it particularly, thought it would come back. But I would go Big 12, Big 10, SEC. So we'd flip 2-3. I think it's a close race, though. I would go... I can absolutely
envision a scenario where we look up in 3 years and John's got Duke at the tip top of the sport. Hubert's got Carolina at the tip top of the sport. And Tony Bennett has got Virginia operating. Precisely. Yeah, I could see that.
I don't even want to put the ACC like a strong four. I think the ACC can still be there. And the Big East, I don't even think we'll be that far behind, particularly if it stays at 11 or, you know, if it were to go to 12 and whatever, they get Gonzaga. I don't think that's happening. But whatever, like the Big East could actually become Big 12 light in that conference size could help it from a rankings and ratings standpoint, because there might, you know, you might only have one or two teams bringing you down. I could see, and the Big East is all in on basketball. I don't put it out of the realm of possibility. Now Neptune's got to hit it big at Villanova, and like Hurley's got to get UConn to that one more notch up, you know, close to Calhoun level. A fascinating conversation. Sorry to the Pac-12. No votes and no, even at least on my end, no coaches even being like, where do I want to put the Pac-12? It's just not considered. It's considered, you know, a definitive six in this conversation going forward.
We'll continue discussing our Candid Coaches series here in just a second. But first, a word from our partners.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. Not only is Bluehost Cloud our fastest web hosting available, but it's also built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you can get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com. Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So after we ask coaches what's going to be the best league going forward, we ask them who's going to be the best player in college basketball this season. And somewhat surprisingly, I guess, if only because the consensus reigning national player of the year is back in college, I was a little surprised that Drew Timmy was the leading vote getter. He got 43.9% of the vote, followed by Oscar Tshiebwe at 33.7%, and then Armando Bacot at 10.2. If I were voting, I would vote for Tshiebwe just because logically it makes sense. He was the best player in the country last season. Clearly, he's back in school, preseason top five team. That's got to be the guy. But that said, I don't think the coaches who voted Timmy are necessarily wrong, because part of the argument would be he's been a consensus All-American two straight years. He's going to be better than ever. And he's not going to be sharing a front court with Chet Holmgren. He's going to be a statistical monster. And on a team that is, you know, in the betting markets, co-favorites with Houston to win the national championship. I would have voted Tshiebwe, but I don't think it's crazy to vote Timmy. And honestly, I don't think it's crazy to vote Bacot, because we talked about this on the North Carolina podcast in the summer shoot around. Oscar won player of the year largely because like the statistics were just overwhelming, but they weren't that much better than Armando Bacot, which I think I had forgotten as that last season got away from us a little bit.
Yeah, those three I figured were going to be the three. I did think Tshiebwe was going to win. So how about this? A little behind the scenes of building this. Parrish. And I haven't told Parrish this yet. Like my first, let's call it my first like 22 or 23 coaches I went to and, you know, asked all these at once. My man, it was like Timmy 16, Tshiebwe 4, Bacot 1, Sasser 1. Like Timmy's lead was outrageous to start. And at one point I was like, is Drew Timmy going to get like a 65% return and beat the national player of the year? Because this is going to be insane. This will actually be a terrible look for coaches if this happens. Now, eventually, it really is a testament to why, you know, I'm insistent on getting, you know, in the ballpark of 100 coaches every year, because if we had stopped at 60, the number would have been different. It would have been an even greater discrepancy. So thankfully, and you got more on the Tshiebwe side than I did with Timmy.
Right.
And it was, you know, a more representative sample size there. But early on, Timmy was out in front and lapping the field. And then eventually it changed up and Tshiebwe closed the gap as he should. Timmy won this last year, by the way, with 45% of the vote. So two consecutive seasons, we ask this question every single year. Timmy has won this and he is the first person in Candid Coach's history. Now, normally the best pick, the guy who's picked to be the best player is usually an outgoing senior who's had a long established career or, you know, the rare returning sophomore that, you know, it's going to be an NBA pick. It just, you know, normally don't get the same guy. Brunson was in the running here, but he didn't win it 2 years in a row. So Timmy's the first one to ever win back-to-back years, win this poll question. But because Gonzaga projects slightly better than Kentucky, Timmy won't have Holmgren. Timmy's more offensive oriented. Cause once I got to that level, Parrish, of when like Timmy was up like 15 votes on Tshiebwe on my end, I asked a few coaches who voted for Timmy. I was like, all right, just so now that you voted, just to let you know, like Timmy's like at the moment, he's really like dominating this poll right now. Why did you vote Timmy? And why do you think a lot of other coaches are voting Timmy instead of the reigning national player of the year at Kentucky? And a few coaches told me the biggest reason why is Timmy will have the ball in his hands more. He's way more offensively dynamic. He's one of the best post players working with his feet around the rim. They think he's going to average better than 20 and 10 this season, and the numbers are just going to be there, and Gonzaga should be a top 10 team most of the season, even if it takes a loss or two in non-conference. They just don't think Gonzaga is going to fall out of that picture. And then so long as Timmy just, you know, kicks ass in the WCC, there's just not going to be a lot to bring him back down once they get into league play. Now, if Bacot or Tshiebwe, I think Trayce Jackson-Davis is a great dark horse for National Player of the Year. Marcus Sasser at Houston obviously got multiple votes there. Jaime Jaquez, shouts to him. Had a couple of coaches like really go all in on Jaquez, saying it's going to be like one coach said, we're going to be talking about him in the middle of December, and he's going to be the best player in the country at that point. Like, I like when coaches come with unconventional nominees and they give me, you know, some conviction with it. So we'll see if that coach is right or not. And that coach is based in the Midwest. He's not a Pac-12 coach. And I don't even know if that coach has ever faced Jaime Jaquez and coached against him. But the point on Timmy is an interesting one. If Gonzaga remains top 10 level into January, doesn't fall out of that spot, and Timmy's stats are that good, there's real reason to believe that they would drop down once he's playing inferior competition and his lead might just be big enough. So those are the reasons why I too was surprised. I thought Tshiebwe would win this narrowly. It wasn't the case there. Timmy with room to spare. And then Bacot, who I actually believe should have received more of the vote. And to UNC fans listening, I know you believe that as well. He's certainly there. I would just keep in mind, we just talked about this on our UNC pod, Caleb Love, I think, has All-American potential, and shouts to Leak and all that, but I think RJ Davis can really take another big step this year. They might, not to say that Timmy and Tshiebwe don't have talent with them, they do, but it almost feels like Carolina might have guys kind of pulling away at production here and there, pulling votes away, so that's why I don't know if Bacot is as likely as Tshiebwe or Timmy.
The one thing working against Timmy would be, not the one thing, but among the things, to the extent that anything works against him, he's going to be awesome. is that, and I had a couple of coaches mention this to me, like, does he just get bored in the WCC? And so much of this, not bored to where he, like, you know, it's just, he's going to have a lot of games where they're favored by 17 points and they're up by 20. And does his minutes per game, like, so much of this, perhaps inappropriately, but so much of this comes down to, like, points per game and rebounds per game. You know, people don't get caught up. Like, you ain't watching a game on CBS and they're talking about points per minute and efficiency numbers too often.
They should, but we're not there yet.
We're not there yet. Oscar played roughly 32 minutes per game last season. Bacot played roughly 32 minutes per game last season. Drew Timmy played 28. And that's largely because we're up 25 with 11 minutes to go. Or we're up 17 with 4 minutes to go. That's actually like a lot of Gonzaga games. We're up 20 with 4 minutes to go. Drew Timmy's on the bench for the final 4 minutes. North Carolina's in a 4-point game with 4 minutes to go. Bacot's closing that. Shibway is closing that. And so on average, they're on the court 4 more minutes per game than Drew Timmy. And that gives them an opportunity at least to have better per game numbers. And when casual fans are just looking at it, well, this guy averages 3 more points per game and 2 more rebounds per game. He must be having the better year. That might not necessarily be true, but it can look true to some people who vote on these types of things. But let me ask you this.
Okay.
I give you Drew Timmy, Oscar Shibue, Armando Bacot, National Player of the Year, or the field.
I'm taking those three? I'm taking those three. I have to. Don't you?
Probably, but like, I could see Marcus Sasser averaging 21 points per game for a Houston team that's ranked number one in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ball in his hands more as a guard. I like that question. Now, to take a note, and let's readdress that when we basically hit the first week of the season and get us on the record again. But I would take those three. It's hard not to, because you've got three centerpiece big men for three teams that will be projected to be in the national championship conversation at the start of the season. So I will take those three. But my question to you before we go on to the next one. So here's the other guys that received one vote: Max Asmus, Oral Roberts. Shouts to whatever coach gave you. I did not get that. That was a coach that whatever coach gave you Max Asmus as the best player. God bless their heart. Hunter Dickinson, Michigan.
I won't say.
What?
I'm not going to say who it was.
You can't. I know. Hunter Dick. It better not. By the way, I did not allow coaches to vote for their own players. So I'm hoping it was not Mr. Mills at Oral Roberts. Hunter Dickinson at Michigan. Keontae George at Baylor. Derek Lively at Duke. Caleb Love at North Carolina. And Nick Smith at Arkansas. Those are players that only received one vote. Those guys only received one vote. Of the names in that group, which one do you give the best chance at being National Player of the Year?
Nick Smith.
Yeah, you're in on a lot of people are in on Nick Smith. Okay. And he's going to be fun.
Like, if he's the best player on an Arkansas team that's ranked in the top five and a projected top three pick in the NBA draft, I could see that.
Give me Keontae George, because I think Baylor has a good shot at winning the Big 12. You win the Big 12, you're a one seed. And I think he's going to be the best freshman in Baylor history. So I will go Keontae George. Of the ones that got just a single vote, he's my pick. But you and I both picked a freshman there. I'm also huge on Lively, but we got a lot of young talent around him. Let's just see. Let's see what happens with Duke there. But I was just curious on your thoughts on that one. I can't wait to see Arkansas. Arkansas is going to be a ton of fun. In fact, we'll get to the Hogs here. In just a minute, I have another thought on them. But yeah, no, I would go Keontae, but a couple of freshmen there. And I think we got 12 players total that received a vote, and Timmy runs away with it.
Rico Gathers is the best freshman in Baylor history.
I don't know about that.
Keontae George is gonna
take that mantle, my friend.
I just wanted to say Rico Gathers.
As you should.
I love him. Next question we asked, best hire. Who was the best hire of the 2022 offseason? And the leading vote getter, and let me be clear, I believe in this guy. I think he's going to be good.
Are you about to take him? Oh, that's What's this setup about then?
No, it's not a setup at all. I'm saying I believe that this guy's going to be good. I love him. I was surprised that he was the leading vote getter. The leading vote getter was Shaheen Holloway at Seton Hall, 15%, followed by Sean Miller at 13%, Kevin Willard at 12%, and then John Shire at 10%. Let me expand on that thought. I assumed that the leading vote getter would either be John Shire, if only because he's already out-recruited the country 2 years in a row. He's got the number one class in 2022, the number one class in 2023. So I thought you could just say, if the guy's going to get the best players in the country every year, he's probably going to be all right. I'll go with John Shire. And if not John Shire, I thought it would be Sean Miller or Thad Matta, because they are both proven, undeniable winners at the high major level. And in Sean's case, and Xavier is high major, but like, you know, Sean's won big at Xavier. He's won big at a bigger school. I understand I understand that Arizona's facing, you know, punishment for rules violations. I got it. But and I'd be interested to hear the feedback you got on this. I think coaches know that that Arizona program was running wild. They still largely believe Sean Miller is really good. That's the feedback I got, at least. Sometimes you'll have coaches whose programs were caught cheating. Let's just call it what it is, cheating. And they'll go, yeah, that guy is a cheater. That's how he won. I don't really get that with Sean too much. I get, yeah, they were running a dirty program in Arizona, but Sean's really good. That's the feedback I mostly got.
I thought Sean Miller would win this when we asked. This is another one we ask every year. We had 19 coaches get at least one vote there. But yes, as you said, Holloway wins, Miller, Kevin Willard, Shire, and Mata and Jerome Tang were tied for fifth overall in our voting there. And we can get to a few other names as well. Miller, guys who voted, you wrote this one, so I think you included this quote, but one coach is like, man, the stuff at Arizona really bothers me a lot, but I have to vote for Sean Miller because I believe he is the best actual coach of any coach that was hired of the,
that,
you know.
That's a unique thing. Usually when we're talking about guys whose programs, and I'm being real careful here not to say Sean Miller was a cheater. His program was cheating. Reasonable people can disagree on what his role was, if he even had a role in any of that. But his program was cheating. And typically what you'll hear from other coaches are, well, of course that guy won. You know what he was doing. That's usually what you're going to hear about coaches who were running programs like the Arizona program was run. And yet with Sean, I'm just speaking, matter of fact, I don't really hear a lot of that. They go, yeah, of course they were running wild at Arizona, but that guy's really good. He's gonna kill it at Xavier like he killed it at Xavier before.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of that there. Holloway winning is fascinating. A couple coaches who didn't vote for so the way some of this goes sometimes with when I'm interviewing is, if I'm doing over the phone, they'll give me all their answers. I'll go question by question. And then with a couple of coaches, they might have given me that mod or Kenny Payne or Frank Martin. And then I'll be like, all right, at this point, it's Holloway that's winning. And they're like, Holloway, interesting. It's like, I like that. Some coaches were like, I like that hire. But if he only beat Kentucky, do you think he would be winning the poll?
Not even close. Yeah. No,
but he did get, it's one of those things where he did win though. He got freaking St. Peter's to the Elite Eight. So,
and he also took St. Peter's, they finished top three in their league three straight years under him. Like I think he's good. I think he's going to be really good there. I'm a believer in Shaheen Holloway. I am surprised he was a leading vote getter, but I'm a believer in him.
And to be clear, a lot of people that might have become familiar with Shaheen Holloway, period. They didn't watch him play at Seton Hall or anything like that. He had a very good reputation in the MAC as a coach for a few years running now. So no one saw one of the best Cinderella runs in the history of the event happening under his watch. But for him, and a lot of it was a couple coaches who voted for him that I talked to. They're like, this is the best fit. I understand Sean's going back to Xavier. But Shaheen Holloway has coached in that state, played at that school, coached at that school. He knows the area. This is the best fit. He is the perfect, that is the job for him. And if there was ever going to be a guy that could take it over from Kevin Willard, and continue to succeed. It's him. Interestingly enough, Seton Hall represent right here with 1-3. Outgoing Kevin Willard, who left for Maryland. Him finishing three was actually surprising to me. I not that he doesn't deserve to be top three. I would have said my prediction going in, I would have said Miller 1, Mata 2. I don't know if I would have said Shire 3 because he hasn't coached a game yet. I probably would have said, oh man, I would have gone Miller, Mata, Frank Martin probably would have been my 1-2-3 prediction. Frank Martin actually finished 7th in our voting. Kenny Payne was 8th, then Dennis Gates and Chris Jans and Mike White rounded out the rest of the top end of the poll there. But my biggest takeaway from this, Parrish, is I kind of tallied the votes, talked to the coaches, looked at the carousel hiring again. This poll is representative of what it should be. I mean, there's so many names here that are intriguing and that you can see succeeding. Now, not all of them will. No, none of them ever do. We never have a 90% success rate at the power conference level in a given year of coaching carousel hires. But you can make a case for Holloway, as you can for Shire, as you can for Tang, as you can for Gates, as you can for Mike White at Georgia. I mean, Mike White was a successful coach at Florida. He got, 2-3 votes overall? But, you know, for Georgia, you look at its history. It would not be surprising if we look up in 5 years and we say, look at Mike White. He's been a top three successful coach in the 2022 hiring class at the power conference level. He basically was able to replicate what he did at Florida, but at Georgia, where the bar to clear is so much lower. I could easily see that, but Mike White wasn't trendy. I was a little surprised Todd Golden didn't get more run, only because he gets a lot of pub. But I think there are a few Golden skeptics in terms of he's never been a head coach at this level. You know, he's still pretty young. He's going into the SEC. There's a lot there. We'll see. But it was enlightening, and it's always intriguing to see what coaches think about their brethren. And I force them to pick one, because a lot of coaches sometimes will be like, I want to pick someone. And I personally, I don't let if I know a coach has worked with another guy. Like I didn't interview Scott Drew for this. All right, but if I did. And maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but if I did, I wouldn't let Scott vote for Jerome, because that's, you know, it's a conflict of interest. So I'd be like, I know Jerome would be your pick, but if it's not Jerome, so I try and avoid conflicts of interest where I can there. And so sometimes that might, slightly impact the vote one way or the other.
I don't want to say who I talked to and who I didn't, but I will say is that I do not put any restrictions on anybody. So if I ask you, what league do you think is going to be best going forward? If you say your own league, that's a vote.
That I allowed. Yeah, that I allowed. But
if you say your own player for best player, I allow that.
All right. So,
and if you say one of your former assistants as the best hire, I allow that.
It's fair.
It is interesting because I was surprised we got this many different answers.
19.
So, yeah, it's a lot of answers.
And normally, like, coaches skew power conference, but if they are dead set, I mean, there's a top 20 well-known, top 25 well-known head coach in the sport who gave me Bart Lundy at Milwaukee. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Roll with Bart Lundy.
We're going to put it down. Yep. some of the answers you got, I had to Google. Like, all right, where is this guy coached at?
Could just have brought up my carousel post. It would have been a lot faster.
I got it all figured out. Like, some guy was yelling at me on Twitter, like, how could you think this guy is going to be better than this other guy? I'm like, I don't think anything. I asked the question.
We're just asking the questions. The fans are furious over this, like, Allen Fieldhouse winning best home court thing. Literally the coach's opinion. What do you want from me?
And by the way, it's the right opinion. How could you be furious about that?
Arkansas fans are furious that they weren't, like, more well represented. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Just don't know what to tell you. I'm not disagreeing with you.
I love Bud Walton Arena, but Allen Fieldhouse is Allen Fieldhouse. Bud Walton Arena, only arena I've ever had to get up from courtside to go throw up in the bathroom during a game.
Who doesn't know that, though?
Threw up during a game. Food poisoning.
What game?
Oh, it was a Memphis, Arkansas game when I was the beat writer a million years ago. Had to get up and go to the bathroom, then throw up. I threw up at Bud Walton Arena.
It's a rough
I don't know what you've ever done in Bud Walton Arena, but I've thrown up there.
I have never, I need to amend this as quickly as possible. Hopefully this season I have yet to step foot inside the state of Arkansas.
Oh, it's great.
I have never been to Arkansas at all.
I was in Arkansas last weekend.
Excellent.
We went to Heber Springs.
Sounds like a good time.
Airbnb, a house, our family, two other families.
Right there on a lake, I assume.
Well, right there on a lake. Went out on the boat a couple of days. It was wild. Like
did you get on the wakeboard?
No, we just tube with the little kids. We had tubes.
You get on the tube?
You ready for this? Literally never got in the lake.
You're ridiculous. I'm angry at that response.
We were on the lake.
You never got in the lake.
Literally never got in the lake.
Why?
I don't have any interest in getting in water. I just like looking at water and being on water.
Outrageous. You know how to swim?
Yeah, of course I know how to swim.
Okay, well, you know how to swim. It's warm out in the south in the summer and you're not jumping into a lake.
Literally never even put my foot
unacceptable
in the water.
Unacceptable.
When I had
this is not okay. This is not okay.
You know, some people like over a 5-hour boat ride, they'll jump in if only to use the bathroom.
Also borderline not okay.
What are you supposed to do what are you supposed to do in a lake? Where are you supposed to be?
I'd get the boat over to the shore, jump in and swim 15 feet to the shore and get it done in nature.
Oh no, you get out and be in the water.
I understand. I'm not going to, it's not a pool. So I get you.
I would just stand on the side of the boat.
Okay.
And whip it out. You know what my friend told me? I said, dude, there's boats over there. Do you think I can pee right here? He said, can you see their nose? I said, no. He said, then they can't see your ding-a-ling. I said, that's good. That's good.
Heck of a size comparison there, by the way. So, okay.
I said, that's good. That's a good rule of thumb. If you can't see their nose, they can't see.
The rule of nose is what it is.
They can't see your ding-a-ling. I said, okay, I'm going to use the bathroom then.
How many hours are you on this boat and not getting into the water?
5 hours a day. We rented a boat for 5 hours a day.
No.
Never got in the water. But it was wild because on Saturday we were out there. It's Heber Springs, Arkansas. And I said, man, the lake is empty. It's a holiday weekend. I'm surprised more people aren't out here. And then I was like, oh, well, Arkansas is playing Cincinnati right now in football. Yeah. The entire state's in Fayetteville. We had a good time. Point. You should get to Arkansas sometime.
Gonna try. What's our last question?
One last thing on this, just to point out how the coaches know what they're talking about, but it doesn't mean they're right. Last year, we asked this question. Tommy Lloyd, who led Arizona to a Pac-12 title and a one seed in the tournament, got less than 3% of the vote. And Hubert Davis, also, who coached in the title game, got less than 3% of the vote. Okay. A few years ago, we asked this question. You know who the leading vote getter was?
Fred Hoiberg.
Who is still looking for his first 11-win season at Nebraska.
He's got the problem is he coaches at Pinnacle Bank, so we can't hold that against him.
Eventually, that place is going to get tough to walk into. Eventually, it's going to get tough to walk into. He got more votes, Fred did. And I didn't think this was wrong, by the way. I didn't think this was wrong. But like he got more votes than Eric Musselman at Arkansas. Must have been a back-to-back Elite Eights. And he got more votes than Mick Cronin, who almost immediately established himself as the best coach in UCLA history.
Right away.
Also, several years back, when Indiana hired Archie Miller, was he the leading vote getter?
I would think he was the leading vote getter.
And yet,
I don't have that in front of me, but yeah.
And he got like a couple of votes, maybe one vote this year at Rhode Island. So interesting how quickly things can flip on you, you know?
That's true. I think Archie at Rhode Island's a good fit. But yeah, good for the Big East. Got a lot of, you can see Thad, Shaheen, Sean, three of the top five. And then, yeah, 8-10 between Fran Dunphy. Got him. So another sitting head coach in a power conference gave Fran Dunphy a vote. I was like, all right. Shouts to Fran, I guess. That's your best hire. He hired himself, by the way. He was the AD.
I love it.
He's like, I'm just taking this.
I love it. I love Fran Dunphy.
Oh, Fran's the man. Don't get me wrong, but I can't list him among the top five hires in this year's cycle.
I got votes for Fran.
So we got two. I got one.
Yeah, I got one too then. Yeah. See, I can see your nose right now, so it would be totally inappropriate for me to urinate at this moment.
It's inappropriate to be on a boat in the summer for 5 hours and not jump into a lake, provided the lake is healthy to swim in.
Oh, it's perfectly healthy. It's a nice lake. It's a nice lake.
That's like something out of Curb, like a thing Larry David would do. He'd like go on a boat and they'd be like, why don't you just jump in the lake? He's like, ah. No, seriously, like it's 86 degrees outside. You know, we're going to be on this for the next 4 hours. Like, no, I'm good. I'm good. That was good.
Yeah, I had no I didn't need to get in the lake. I wasn't against getting in the lake. If somebody was like, please get in the lake, I'd have been like, okay, I can do it.
I'm making dinner 6 hours from now. It's just going to pop in my head and be like, why didn't Paris just jump in the water? I don't get it. People will side with me on this, by the way. That's unserious boat behavior. Unserious boat behavior. Not okay with it.
It's fine.
Shot clock. Let's get to it.
We asked coaches, roughly 100. Should we stick at a 30-second shot clock or go to a 24-second shot clock? And you actually LOL'd at this, because the way this works is Norlander asks his group of coaches, and I ask mine. And then, like, when I'm writing the post, I'll say, yo, send me your results and send me your best quotes, and vice versa. So he's got his, and you text me the other day. You're like, hey, send me your shot clock stuff. I'm like, I'm on the golf course. I'm busy bogeying right now. Let me finish three putting right now. Oh,
there we go. That's right.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm not good at anything. It's just frustrating.
You got to loosen the muscles in the water. Helps the golf game.
I was so sure that I was about to get good at golf. Just can't. I can't do it. So I was like, I'm on the golf course. I'll send them to you when I get done with the golf course. So then I send you my results, and it added up to like literally 50-50. So coaches, some guys feel strongly about this, whether it should be 24 or 30, but there is not a consensus on the type of shot clock we should have in college basketball. You wrote the post, so I'll let you explain, because I think some people might go, okay, what are the reasons we'd want to stay at 30, and what are the reasons we might want to go to 24? So you walk us through that.
Okay, so this has been a discussion. Going to 24 has been a discussion in college basketball for more than a decade. It has intensified in the past, 8 to 10 years. There was, if you're watching on YouTube,
YouTube.
You can read some of the quotes from the story. I put more quotes in here than Paris could ever dream of, because the response from coaches on this was so impassioned, particularly for ones that want to stick at 30. When the clock was at 35, they were debating to drop to 30 or 24, or to go to 24 and 30 was almost like a compromise with it. 24-second shot clock is not just the NBA. It's international ball. It's FIBA. When we go and see the Peach Jam, it's 24 seconds is there. There is no shot clock in high school. But the thought is, get possessions up, get games to be more likely to finish in the 70s or 80s. And just, adapt to the game the way that it's played around the world. And in doing so, better help college players that are on track to either definitely be NBA players or in that window where they could be. And maybe a 24-second shot clock would help them overall. Let's just get them there. Let's play in that way and upgrade the clock once and for all. There wasn't a shot clock in men's college basketball until the 1980s, and it started with a 45-second shot clock before it was trimmed down to 35 for better part of two decades. And then we dropped down to 30 back in the 2015-2016 season. I believe this is the first question we've ever had exactly a 50-50 split. Now, some years we wind up with an odd number of coaches we talk to, so it can't be 50-50. This one was exactly 50% on one side, 50% on the other. If not, I feel like in the past 2 years, we had one that was like literally 51-49. So really, really close. But if you are a proponent of 24 seconds, the good news is the coaching fraternity is moving in your direction. 10 years ago, if we had asked this question, this is the 10th year that we've done this series. If we had asked this in year one, I'm highly confident that if we said, and at that time it was the 35-second shot clock. So if we had said, what do you want the shot clock to be? 35, 30, or 24? Highly confident that if we'd asked it 10 years ago, 24 wouldn't have gotten more than 15% of the vote, if that. But because this has become more of a talking point every year on the Rules Oversight Committee, and there's more of a push, and frankly, commentators, the reason why we even included this question was because Fran Fraschilla tweeted about this like kind of out of the blue a month ago, and the tweet gained a lot of traction among coaches, people, you know, in college basketball media, quote tweeting, tweeting back at Fran. Jay Billis has been a proponent for 24 seconds for a long time. I was tweeting back and forth, or texting back and forth with Jay on Thursday about this. And you know, Jay maintains that the arguments against going to 24 are the same arguments that were against going to 30 or whatever.
That's right.
I'm not all the way there on that. This is why, as I wrote in the story, I'm actually ambivalent on this. It doesn't make for a spicy take, but my take is, if you tell me college basketball is going to be at 30 seconds for the remainder of my life, I'm totally fine with it. It doesn't bother me. If you told me next season we'll go to 24, I'd be like, all right, that's pretty cool. Let's see how it goes. I'm good with either. It does not bother me. I don't mind whatever way, but the proponents of 30 insist, and I think they've got a point, and we can't know until we get there. There's no shot clock in high school. The NBA has guys, minimally four, normally five, on the floor who are capable of getting their own shot, creating their own shot, shooting from beyond 8 feet, beyond 15 feet. College basketball does not with most teams. And because high school players don't play with a shot clock, the jump from nothing to 30 even takes a little bit of time getting used to. And I talked to four college basketball officials who believe that going to 24 would lead to a really rough period, like multiple years. One official said, we'd go down in points per game. You'd have more possessions. The shooting would be much worse. And you'd lose 3, 4, maybe 5 points per game on average, which is like a very drastic drop there. I don't know.
We'd lose points per game. I think the efficiency numbers might go down.
Efficiency would go down. Turnovers would go up. There's just no doubt about it.
I agree with that, but I think because of the extra possessions, we would get just raw. We'd get more points.
I believe that the change from 35 to 30 is not nearly as drastic. Like when you go from 30 to 24, and if you go 24, maybe you go from 10 to 8 seconds in the backcourt. And then as one coach told me, like it's effectively like a 16 second shot clock. Like that is pretty quick to start running your stuff. Not to say that coaches wouldn't eventually adapt, that players wouldn't adapt. I'd be fine with it. But like, do call it like, I think a lot of college basketball fans like 30. I don't know if you go to 24, you're pushing people away. I don't know if 24 makes the game more popular. What's your take on the responses we got and where you'd like to see it? Or if you're kind of like me and you're like, I'm good with where we're at and I'd be fine if we changed it.
This is not, if you told me to list five things I'd like to see changed in college basketball, I don't think this would make the list. But I would prefer 24 to 30. The argument for 30 that I can sort of nod along with and be like, yeah, I see, is that, and I heard this from a few coaches, with 30, you've got a little more room for different styles. And the different styles, that is what makes college basketball, in part. It's one of the good things about college basketball.
Some coaches
said. And so if you go down to 24, it eliminates some of the ways teams can play at this level. It's kind of cool that Virginia and Gonzaga play the same sport, but play it dramatically differently. And if you, the lower you go with the shot clock, the less that's going to be a thing in the sport. And I get that. That doesn't make me say, okay, yeah, definitely we got to stay at 30 then. But I respect that opinion and I understand that opinion. I would still like to go to 24. And it's not because of, like, because I heard some of this too, like, you know, it helps prepare people for the NBA. I don't care about preparing people for the NBA as it pertains to putting rules in place. Like if you're a college basketball coach, I assume you want to prepare people for the NBA. But the overwhelming majority of college basketball players are not going to the
99%.
NBA.
99%. I agree with that entirely. Like, yeah, most people are not going to the NBA. But
I don't care about, you know, let's put this rule in so it matches the NBA because it'll help prepare people for the NBA. Like that should not be a priority. But I like the game faster, you know? And I get that, you know, 24 seconds, you more or less got a 16 seconds to get into your stuff. I got that, but like, I don't know, give me a high ball screen and let's go. I want more possessions. I like a faster game. If I had to pick, I'd go to 24. But it's not something I'm going to fist fight anybody over.
If you made me pick, if you made me, I'd say stick at 30 because of the variety of styles. Coaches believe 30 allows for more opportunity for more upsets, which is a good thing. At least I think it's a good thing. But I would not resist 24 whatsoever. One coach said, listen, if you go to 24, like, it's just the game is going to, like, there's so much, like, high pick and roll in the NBA, and that's that. And then another coach made a great point. He's like, listen, there are a lot of bad shots taken in the NBA. Those guys are elite at making bad shots. College basketball is not. So you're going to get like a lot of missed shots. And is that ultimately a better thing? Are you, from a television or, cosmetic standpoint, are you actually helping the game if you're going to reduce field goal percentage by this amount? There are still people that are cynical over whether or not that would actually happen. Again, we won't know until it gets there. I tend to believe that those coaches are probably right, at least for a season or two. Eventually, the players will adapt, the coaches will adapt, and the game will get there. But I think not having a shot clock in high school, I actually think that is a significant learning curve from a team playing perspective. And I do like the fact that the way Gonzaga plays is not how Virginia plays, and how Davidson plays isn't how Texas Tech plays, right? And how Villanova plays isn't how Oregon plays. I like those aspects about the game. I predict that we will have this 24-second clock experimented on in the NIT by the end of the decade, but I don't think it's 2022. I would be surprised if we go to 24 before we hit the year 2030. I just don't think we're getting there. Again, higher percentage of coaches going for 24 now, saying we should do that than ever before. So it's moving that direction. Takes college basketball a while. I talked with one person who's on the oversight committee yesterday after this went up, and they didn't seem as, they were not giving off the impression that this rule change was coming around the bend here. There's going to have to be a lot more discussion, talk, and frankly, 24 backers pushing for it before we get there. So if you're someone who likes the 30-second clock, I think you're safe for at least another half decade before any change gets instituted.
The last thing I'll add on this is that I agree with the coaches who tell you the longer the shot clock, the more opportunity there is for upsets, because fewer possessions, more opportunity there is for the inferior team to win. There are some coaches who will tell you that's why Virginia gets caught every once in a while, because they're just playing low possession games, and they've got the better team, but they're playing low possession games, and it gives the inferior team a better opportunity to beat them. Think of it as a football game. Like what if you only had a one quarter football game? Well, then Alabama might get beat sometimes. I mean, probably not, but you get the point. You stretch it out over four quarters, Alabama's gonna get you by the end of it. If you made it six quarters, the likelihood of you upsetting them would fall even lower. So I get that. I think the counterpoint would be lower shot clock, probably more three pointers attempted. And that's how you actually get upsets, is some team goes out and bangs home, 16 of 34 from three.
It'd be like the NBA, and just, that's like exactly the 12-point right. lead is gone quicker than than it is in college.
You hear it all the time in the NBA. You'll get this weird result. Like, and the Warriors just lose to Sacramento. And you're like, well, how did the Warriors lose to Sacramento? Or how did the Bucks lose to the Magic? And almost always go to the box score and just look at the three-point shooting. It's like, oh, well, yeah, they made 20 three-pointers. In the NBA, you get wild results all the time, and they are often directly tied to three-pointers attempted and three-pointers made. And because in the NBA, that's how the game's played now. It's a lot of three-point shots, more than ever.
Yeah.
And if you lower the shot clock in college, I think you'll increase the number of three-pointers attempted. And then, you'll have an inferior team, I'm just making numbers up here, but go 14 of 31 from three, and that'll lead to upsets. And so from an upset perspective, I could argue either direction. We done here? I can see your nose.
Let's get on out of here.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Huck. Larnell, thank you guys once again for listening to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Over at Apple, we need 5 stars and a nice review. Type some words. There's more of us than there are of them. We might not get into the lake every time we go to the lake, but there's more of us than there are of them. I guarantee you that. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't done that yet. We'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.